Otoku Secrets is a podcast run by the Anime Secrets website. Check us out at animesecrets.org for more anime, video game, tokusatsu content. Remember to follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts today.
Tokusatsu, taking the form of many shows including Super Sentai, Kamen Rider, and Metal Heroes. And today, a group of fans come together to review it for you as Toku Secrets.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of the Toku Secrets podcast, presented by AnimeSecrets.org. I'm your host, Boken Silver, Nipin Desa. And today, we are beginning yet another Sentai. We took a bit of a break to Gridman, and now we are back to Super Sentai, as we are going to be reviewing Yoryu Sentai G-Ranger. We got the whole crew back on again. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. Go ahead, guys.
Nope. Pat Chink and Red.
Rizwan, Gokai Red, and dear God, I am happy that this is better than anything I got with Zahn as the main protagonist. That is my pop shot in the first 10 seconds there.
Wow, that's a record.
See, now, but okay. And I'm Anthony, also known as Kiryu Green.
This is laughing at what you just said.
Really, Riz? You don't think Don is as annoying? Oh my, they have names that rhyme. Don is about as annoying as John, in my opinion, to be honest.
No, I'm going to get there when we get there. Okay. But I will say I don't like Don. Or no, actually, his name is Dan, isn't it? Dan.
Dan, yeah. Or Don, whatever.
Who cares?
No, I didn't like Dan. I don't like Dan. He's not winning any awards for me, honestly. But I would rather him than Dan.
I guess fair enough.
So, if I had to pick a poison, I'm going to go to one that doesn't hurt me as much.
That's like picking between two piles of trash. Who cares? They're both piles of trash.
Well, no. The better analogy is, that's like picking your next American president.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're screwed no matter what you do.
Right. <Exactly. laughs>
Alright, so anyway, like I said, we're doing Kiryu Sentai G-Ranger, which translates as Dinosaur Squadron Beast Ranger. It aired from February 1992 to February 1993. The series head writer is Noboru Sugimura. He was previously the head writer of Kamen Rider Black, and he was the main writer of a couple of Metal Hero series, Mobile Cop Jibon, and Special Rescue Police Wind Specter, and Super Rescue Soul Brain. I've never seen any of those series. I've heard that Wind Specter is good, but I'm not sure. And he would be the head writer of Super Sentai for the next 4 years, starting with this. So he would do G-Ranger, and he would be the head writer of Die Ranger, Cocky Ranger, and O Ranger. Unfortunately, he passed away in February of 2005. He was trying to be a more experimental writer, which is why, you know, he was trying a lot of different things. Like, he especially tried that in Die Ranger. I don't know though if we're gonna. I mean, just to kind of give a preview, though, I think the only Sentai that I like from his resume that I genuinely like and would rewatch again is Cocky Ranger. But
yeah, I was about to say.
we'll get to that. We'll talk more about that when we get to it. G-Ranger is the first Sentai to feature a dinosaur motif, a very popular motif that's been used in Abba Ranger, Ryuger, and Ryu Soldier. So it's like the most overused Sentai motif ever. In fact, there's literally a crossover movie where they have G-Ranger, Abba Ranger, and Kyoryuger team up, even though that was supposed to be Kyoryuger's team up with the Go Busters, and that was adapted into a Power Ranger special too, by the way. Most importantly, and this is the reason why everybody here in the U.S. loves this Sentai, it was adapted into Season 1 of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. The suits, at least the main five, continue to be used in original footage for the second and third seasons of the show. So it's a fan favorite here in the U.S. And interestingly enough, this is the only Sentai to date where every single monster of the day was adapted into Power Rangers. Like, every other Sentai, other than Geo Ranger, there's been at least maybe like one or two monsters that didn't appear in Power Rangers. So that's big.
Going back, are we positive Zero Ranger is a fan favorite in America? Or are you trying to tell us that the suits are the fan favorite? Because I'll agree with you on the suits being a fan favorite. I would not agree with you on Zero Ranger being a fan favorite.
It's honestly, from the perspective I've seen online, it's kind of 50-50.
Yeah.
But
it's not really loved in Japan, though. I can tell you that.
Oh, the Japanese.
It's not loved in Japan.
The Japanese fan base hates the season.
And you would think that, it's dinosaurs. They'll love it. They didn't.
Well, I mean, okay, so the dinosaur motif is really cool. I liked it growing up. It worked for me. But just what I've seen at 10 episodes so far, I could see this not being the most popular season. There's some glaring faults in it that make it not so.
Well, it also wasn't popular when it came out, because you have to remember, it came on immediately after Jetman, which everyone loved. And
regardless of what you think of Jetman, this is a massive step in the wrong direction in comparison.
Yeah.
I'm holding the jury on that one for right now.
Yeah, well, the jury won't have to wait very long.
Look, man, I am doing my role in this podcast series of being the foil to Patrick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good luck with that.
At some point, we're going to take a pool on how long I can keep this up for.
You'll see. You'll see.
So there's a couple of things to talk about before we jump into reviewing the first 10 episodes. First, we're going to briefly comment on what could have been. I saw this on the Ranger Wiki page. Apparently in early production, so it was always going to be called Kyoryu Sentai, and it was always going to be a dinosaur theme series. But the original title was going to be called Saurus Man, and I couldn't find any information if there was going to be a sixth ranger, but the rangers were going to be... So Red is pretty much the same. Red Tyranno, male. Black Brachio, male. Green Tricera, male. A female Yellow Ranger, Yellow Stegosaurus, and a Blue Terra. And they would have a secondary mech based on a mammoth. I don't know. I'm glad that they changed it to Geo Ranger, because Saurus Man just sounds kind of weird, to be honest.
This is a bit of a mouthful.
Doesn't sound catchy either. Like, who wants to hear a song about the Saurus Man? Saurus Man!
Okay. So, in the Gokaiser world, I'd much prefer to hear Zio Ranger.
The Mo Byrets. The Mo Byrets, the Zoo Ranger's name, pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But saying Saturn, man, it doesn't. No.
It doesn't roll the tongue. Yeah, it's not. No,
it doesn't work. I mean, it's like when they're saying Dad, it doesn't work.
I will say, though, that in this version, though, all five of them are based on dinosaurs, because you do realize that, like, two of these rangers' animals aren't dinosaurs. Like, a mammoth and a saber-toothed tiger aren't dinosaurs.
Yeah.
So, maybe
that is an interesting thing.
And maybe I kind of wish that they kept the Brachiosaurus and the Stegosaurus in this situation. But I don't know what you're gonna do.
You wonder why they chose the mammoth and the saber tooth in this.
I mean, they're
predominant animals.
They're prehistoric. They're prehistoric creatures, so they're not out of place. It just seems weird when it's like a dinosaur, when they claim it's a dinosaur thing.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I wasn't trying to say like, oh, they didn't like fit as prehistoric animals. I just wonder why they didn't go with all dinosaurs. Is what I meant to say. Mm-hmm.
I guess black being brachio-themed is something that they gave them the idea to make Abar black. Knob Arranger, since Bobar Black is Brachio-themed, and the Carrier Mech being based on a Mammoth, maybe that was the inspiration for the Revolver Mammoth or the Mammoth Zord and Hurricaner / Ninja Storm. I don't know, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Saurus Man just sounds stupid. I'm glad that they changed that. All right, one last thing. Just some brief facts on the main cast of G-Ranger. Yuta Mochizuka, who plays Geki. I've actually met him in person. He's really awesome. He was previously the leader of the Neo Jetman and Chojin Sentai Jetman. We already saw that when we reviewed Jetman. Similarly, Jun Tatara. Hideki Fujiwara, who played Don Triceranger, was another character named Don, one of the warriors from Chojin Sentai Jetman. Again, we pretty much reviewed that, and he doesn't really play much of a different character in this show, unfortunately.
Literally, he's the exact same person. Like, literally, like that meme from The Office where, like, I need you to see the difference between these two papers, and you see Don, and you see other Don, and he's like, this is the same picture.
It's the same people. There's nothing different whatsoever about him.
Yeah. Jun Tatara, who plays Barza, he's going to be their mentor in this season. He had a recurring role on Uchu Cage Gabon, the popular Metal Hero series that he was the owner of a racing company that Gabon works for. And I can't remember what the episode was, but I do know that they used footage of him to play Zordon's human form at some points in a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I can't remember the exact episode, but I do know that they did that before. And but unfortunately, he died in 2006 from a lung disease. And the big one is Michiko Soga, who plays Witch Bondora, the main villain of this Sentai. She was, at this point, a veteran Sentai actress. She voiced the monster, a monster of the day, in Battle Fever J, and she also played the human version, a human form of that monster. She was the main villain in Digimon, Queen Herdian, and she actually reprised that role as like a secondary villain in Sun Vulcan. She was in one episode of Mask Man as the mother of one of the main villains, and then she played Majel in Maji Ranger, and that was her last role before she died from pancreatic cancer in 2006. And they actually, Power Rangers actually paid tribute to her death by having her character in Majel be adapted into the Mystic Mother in Power Rangers Mystic Force. So that was pretty cool. So we're going to jump in. Since this series doesn't have a cold open, and it's going to kick off with the theme song, we might as well talk about the theme song. Just a brief fun fact about this theme song, though. It is actually performed by Ken Sato, who was... he previously sung the theme song for Turbo Ranger, and he was also the actor who played Red Turbo. So that's pretty cool. I got some very choice words to say about this theme song, so I'm going to let the other guys give their thoughts on it first, because I don't want to... I got some very choice words to say about
it.
So
it's not an an inherently bad theme, but it's definitely one of the weakest Sentai themes ever.
I'm gonna go first with my quick comment before I let Nate and Patrick rip into shreds. I kind of heard Patrick not rip into shreds, so maybe. But
I already said my piece.
Yeah. No, the theme was okay. It wasn't anything that I would... I listened to it once on episode one, and then after I skipped it in every episode since that I've watched, because it wasn't catchy, it wasn't good. It was just borderline mediocre at best. So, Anthony and Nathan, have at it.
Anthony?
I thought it was okay. It wasn't like... you know, anything spectacular, but I thought it was just okay.
Okay.
It was okay. That's it. But
I hate this theme song. I think it's the worst theme song in Super Sentai. And the reason why is because, like, with every other Sentai that I listen to, so there's two different kinds of Sentai themes. There's the ones, like, you know, like Shinkenger and Ghostagers that give me, like, the, yeah, like, energy whenever it plays on screen. Mm-hmm. And then there's other ones where they're a bit slower, like, and maybe they don't give me the same rush of energy, but I still get a lot of, like, catchy beats from it. Like, you know, Kaku Ranger's theme song, okay, it's not fast and, like, energy packed, but it's still got catchy moments like Kaku Ranger, Ninja, Ninja.
Oh, gosh. Kaku, dude, well, the first time I watched Kaku Ranger, that song was stuck in my head for weeks.
Yeah. So I get something out of it, but I get nothing from this theme song. It's too slow to give me a rush of energy. And
yeah.
And it doesn't have any catchy beats to it that no. I find myself humming at times.
Man, look at the Sentais that it's sandwiched between.
Yeah, I get nothing from this theme song. Now, it's not as bad as Operation Overdrive's theme song, because that's, like, unbearable to listen to, but it's just barely above it.
It's funny we're talking about this right now, because, fun story from earlier today. So, I'm in the, Power Ranger Audio Drama's Discord server, and I saw a bunch of the Patreon members hopping on the voice call, and they're talking earlier. And so, I didn't know what was going on, so I hopped in as well, and I hung out with them for a couple of hours. And the reason the story is interesting to me is they were ranking each and every Power Ranger theme song as S tier, A tier, B tier, C tier, whatever. And little did I know at the time, they were actually recording a podcast that I just randomly joined. So for the first time in history, Rizwan's in a podcast he doesn't run. but it was just really entertaining listening to them talk about which theme songs they thought were the GOAT versus which ones they thought were not the GOAT. and hearing Nathan talk about how much he doesn't like this one, it's just a fun coincidence that this is a discussion we're having right now after this morning.
I think the only other Sentai theme song I would put down here with this one, and this is probably a controversial thing, but it's Abba Ranger. I don't care for Abba Ranger's theme song at all.
What?
Yeah.
It has the same kind of problem where it's just very bland.
Not to me.
I disagree, but I can see what you're saying.
I can't agree with that. I'm sorry.
It's probably my least favorite theme song from that era, at the very least. Like, if I had to pick between, like, this or, like, you know, the Deca Ranger or Maji Ranger theme, that would probably be the worst out of those three, technically, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to be reviewing the first 10 episodes, so we got a lot to talk about, so let's jump in. Believe it or not, there's actually a lot of several two-parters. Like, literally, episodes 1 and 2 are a two-parter, 3 and 4 are a two-parter, and 5 and 6 are a two-parter. So, so let's start off with the opening two-parter.
9 and 10.
Yeah, 9 and 10, too. In our first episode, we are introduced to our entire main cast. The plot of the episode is that, as it opens, is that Witch Bondora and her gang are freed from their imprisonment on planet Nemesis by two unsuspecting astronauts, whose footage is literally used as the astronauts that free Rita on the moon. And Wizard Barza revives the Geo-Rangers from their stasis to continue their mission to defend Earth. We get introduced to our main characters. We have our brave leader, Yamato Tribe Prince Geki, Tyranno-Ranger, Red. Stoic and intelligent Sharma Tribe Knight, Goshi, Mammoth Ranger, Black. Free-spirited and brash Etof Tribe. I don't know how to pronounce some of these things, and I really don't care. exactly. It's not like they're going to go into much detail about what these tribes are, anyway.
What detail?
Exactly. Don, Tricera Ranger, Blue. Young and Optimistic, Dime Tribe, Night Boy, Tiger Ranger, Yellow. Everyone knows this. The Yellow Ranger is male in the Sentai, despite it being a woman.
Boy, it's a boy.
Yeah. And Gentle and Caring, Lithia, Tribe Princess May, Terror Ranger, Pink.
You know, go ahead.
What was that?
I was going to say something real quick, but I can wait.
Oh, okay. I'll just finish listing off the cast. We have their mentor, Sage Barza, who works as a maintenance man at an apartment complex where the G-Ranger secret base is. And then our villains, we have Witch Bondora, who was Rita's counterpart. She's the main one. Her gang include her monster maker, a leprechaun-based villain called Pleprechaun, Venster's counterpart, a scatterbrained vampire alchemist, Thought Pat, Babu, his dim-witted hobgoblin partner, Bookback, that was Squat, and finally, her griffin warrior and like main general, Grifforzer, who was adapted into Goldar, and for a long time, Grifforzer actually is not capable of intelligent speech. I will bring up when he is, but at least in this batch of episodes, Grifforzer is not capable of speaking. And she has armies of soldiers that are made of clay called golems. They were made into the putties. Okay, what were you going to say, Riz?
I was going to say, you know, as much as I love the Once and Always special, one thing that crossed my mind earlier watching Zero Ranger was, what if Trini had a son and we got a male Yellow Ranger in MMPR canon? I thought that'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Just like a callback to the Sentai, but you know, not anything profound to mention. I just thought it was a cool thing to kind of make a one-off comment about.
So for this episode, Bondora, after they get freed, they begin attacking Earth, and they actually capture two children that are trapped in the space shuttle when they shrink the space shuttle down. Barza frees the G-Rangers, although for a reason that doesn't really have much of a bearing on the plot, Geki takes a little longer to revive. And Geki saves the other G-Rangers before they nearly get burned to death in Bondora's palace, after which Barza gives them their dino medals, which is what we're adapting to the power coins. And they use their dino bucklers, power morphers, to transform into the G-Rangers. Brief thing, you guys, of course, the G-Ranger standard sidearm is called the Ranger Stick, which has a gun and a mini dagger form, blade blasters. One thing that was not adapted into Power Rangers that we'll see very frequently is that Geki, Goshi, and Don all have their own motorcycles called the Soarer Machines, and Goshi and Don's cycles have sidecars attached to them for Boy and May to ride in. Most of the time they use these motorcycles when they're untransformed, so that's why you don't see them in Power Rangers, although they did make toys out of them. They transform into the G-Rangers, and this is probably going to be a short discussion since I know we all have very fond feelings of it, but what do we think of the G-Ranger suits, guys? Anybody want to go first?
They're one of the best suits in the franchise set up.
I know a lot of people complain about them having just a diamond design on them, but personally, I've always been a fan of more simplistic outfits, and the helmets are just perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Like, these are probably my favorite Sentai suits ever.
They're top three for me. I think that there's a perfect balance between color and white and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing to complain about with those helmets.
These are top three for me as well. Yeah. My top three probably would be these suits, Mega Ranger, and Gokai. Because I really enjoy the pirate motif, but yeah.
One of the things that
and I also wins, love the space suits.
Yeah. One of the things that wins these over for me is that in motion I think they look perfect. Like they look sleek.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. And even now, if you look at the suits in action, they still hold up really well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's some suits that, when you look at them now, like, you know, almost 30 years later, they don't necessarily hold up that well. Like, most of the Die Rings receipts don't hold up that well to me.
No.
A lot of the early Sentai as well, but that's a product of them being early Sentai.
Yeah.
But, and I agree.
No, I just love the details that they add to the helmet. Like, they don't try to do the same thing for every helmet. Like they really went all out. And I appreciate that even more nowadays, because, like, I'm going to be honest, like, even though I think that Abba Ranger might be a really good Dinosaur Sentai, when I look at those helmets, it looks like they just did the bare minimum, like the dinosaur motif. Like, these are the only suits that from, like, a dinosaur-themed Sentai that I think are still really great. I know you like the Kyoryuger suits, Anthony, but I'm not really a huge fan of those.
I'm not, I mean, it's fine. It's not a taste for everybody, but I'm still going to defend them no matter what, so, yeah.
Well, what do you think of the suits, though, Anthony? You were kind of quiet.
Oh, no. I grew up with these suits in Power in Mighty Morphin, so, like, you already know I'm going to be like, yeah, these suits are awesome, so.
Yeah. I mean, would we say that they're in the top, even if we kind of took the nostalgia factor out, though?
Is that what well, I don't have nostalgia factor out, then nah, it still holds up, honestly, for me.
My top three is unchanged, even if you take nostalgia out of it.
Yeah. Like, I don't have as much nostalgia for Mighty Morphin because I did watch it when it was airing, but I was kind of too young to remember it. The first season I remember watching thoroughly was Turbo, so those are probably the ones I had the most nostalgia for. I don't like the Car Ranger outfits that much, to be honest. So
yeah, fair enough.
The Zoo Ranger suits are just the best to me.
I mean, the only suits I would definitely put ahead of these are the Maji Ranger suits, and that's for I really love those suits, but those just barely have to do it.
Yeah, it's the capes. I don't blame you.
Yeah. Well, those are still awesome looking suits. I like those suits.
Yeah, they are.
All right, so pretty much. This episode ends on a cliffhanger where Geki, Goshi, and Boy are holding off Graforzer, and Dan and May try to save the space shuttle. But then the first of Bondora's monsters, the Dora Titan, this giant monster, appears and steals the space shuttle. And that leads us to episode 2, where the Geo Rangers are lured into a trap. Now, an important thing to note is that we actually get more of the backstory of the Geo Rangers in this episode. 170 million years ago, during the time of the dinosaurs, there were 5 tribes of humans, of human civilization. They were all protected by a dinosaur guardian, and they lived in peace. And then when Bondora rose to power, the 10 guardian beasts sealed her away on planet Nemesis, and each of the 5 tribes chose a warrior to be placed in stasis, ready to fight in case Bondora ever returned. Those are the Geo Rangers. Geki actually reveals that he lost his parents and his little sister in the battle, which his little sister is going to be kind of weird to factor in when given a later arc, but we'll talk about that when we get to it.
I want to make a snark comment here real quick. If you want any more information about the Zoo Rangers backstories from this, too bad.
Yeah.
This is literally 95% of the backstory info we get on these people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have opinions on that, which I'll get to at the end when we're talking about our characters, but I'm going to hold my tongue until then.
We are shown how Bondora's monsters are made. If you've seen Mighty Morphin, then you know what happens. Pleprechaun makes mini models out of clay and then uses a machine to bring it to life. He creates a skeleton monster in this episode. And most of the episode is just the Geo Rangers battling against Dora's skeleton to save the space shuttle, which they do. And then at the very end, when Dora Titan reappears, Geki's guardian beast, a Tyrannosaurus, arrives, and Geki takes control of it and uses it to defeat Dora Titan. And the episode ends with the Geo Ranger standing victorious and putting their hands together. So what do we all think about this introduction arc, guys? Anyone want to go first?
I'm gonna go first.
Okay.
Before Patrick can say a word. Because if I don't, I'm not gonna get a word in. So I'm gonna just start off by saying this isn't anything to write home about. I honestly think Data Dumpster did this a lot better, and that's ironic given they ripped it from here. This is super mediocre. It was not anything that interesting. I did like the way he woke them up by putting the key in the door to revive him from some weird Superman-esque looking portal that floats into air thing. That was kind of cool, but other than that, I mean, cool, I guess, but it was just mediocre. Like, I would probably just say, I'm going to just give it a score right now. This is probably like a 6 or a 7 for me.
Okay.
Y'all can go next, whoever wants to go.
Anyone else want to go before me?
You want to get yours out of the way, Anthony?
Oh, yeah, I'll get mine out of the way. Like, the introduction was fine. It was just, I can't really put my finger on it, though. It was like, they emphasized so much about how, like, why, like, the delay with Geki kind of just confused me. I'm just like, if they were, like, why they had to delay his introduction where it didn't really amount, it didn't really, like, affect it that much. It could have just, like, I don't know, it all could have came out at the same time and it wouldn't change anything. That's just my opinion, though.
Yeah, I mean, it just, I've seen worse openings for Sentai. Looking at you, Geki Ranger. But I've also seen way better openings for Sentai. And this one just doesn't do anything to stand out in the crowd. Like, I don't know. It was kind of eh to me, is what I'll say.
I'll just get mine out of the way so I can let Patrick give his piece. I think, okay, I like this. I mean, I don't think it does a great, the reason why I take off points is that I don't think it does a good job at conveying the personalities of the Geo Rangers. I think we get a little bit of Don since we're shown that he's a little bit lazier in this episode, but in the second one at least. But I don't know. I mean, I give it a free pass just because it's the first few episodes and the first two episodes. And we're shown that they're noble enough to be Rangers. The thing that I love, though, is that I love how they only introduce the Tyrannosaurus. I miss the days of Sentai where the individual mechs are capable of fighting by themselves.
You mean you don't like how King Odzer did the Zord release?
Wait, what do you mean?
I'm making a joke.
Right. Okay. Sorry about that.
I'm making a joke saying you normally complain about how much you hate King Odzer for the way they did the mech release.
Well, okay, but okay, the Tyrannosaurus comes out in the second episode.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
If Zoo Ranger was released. If Zoo Ranger came out now, Daijujin would have been in the first episode.
Oh, I do think it would have been in the first 2 minutes.
Definitely.
So, I really like how they're going about with the mecha introductions, but we'll talk more about that later.
Yeah.
Okay, Patrick. Have at it.
Alright, got some popcorn ready, guys? This might take a while.
The first thing I want to hit upon is something I've kind of brought up before, specifically when I talk about my praises of Dino Charge. These guys have been asleep for 170 million years, was it, right?
Yeah.
They get waken up. They're told to go fight Bandor. What is the first thing they do?
They hop on a motorcycle and they go riding.
How do they know how to drive a motorcycle?
Okay.
You know what? That was my initial thought, too. I was like, why are they driving
motorcycles? How?
I knew you were going to bring this up. I didn't want to steal your thunder, okay? But I want to remind you of something that you and I have had a personal talk about offline.
Okay.
Many years ago. And you told me it's not a big deal at that point. Do you remember in Wild Force when Cole was driving a motorcycle immediately after getting out of the jungle?
No. I don't remember Wild Force well. Did it? It okay, happened. My opinions have probably
and
changed.
You were just...
My opinions on that would probably have changed by now, and I don't particularly like the sound of that either.
Yeah, it was totally...
It's... Correct. This is one of my biggest pet peeves in media, and Sentai has done a really terrible job of this amongst a lot of different seasons, because Kyoryu Gold wasn't any better, but Culture Shock, like...
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll let this one slide, because this one's a bit of a nitpick, but technically Japanese power wasn't even a language at the time where they were alive originally.
Yeah.
So how are they speaking fluent Japanese? But you kind of need to have them communicate with people, so I'll let that one slide. But the next thing I want to bring up, and I'm going to be using this term a lot throughout this review series, and it's coincidence. I'm convinced that the writers didn't know how to write the Zoo Rangers out of problems. So they just made things happen. The key to unlock Geki's door breaks. Oh crap, how are we going to get him out? The Tyrannosaurus guy is like, oh, I'm just going to open the door. Why did you need the keys? Couldn't they, the five of them, just done that on their own anyway?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh crap, the other four are about to die. Oh, well, now I'm just going to conveniently open his door and let him out.
Well, okay. Yeah, I didn't understand that either. Like, why would they make a big deal out of Geki being locked away for longer?
They try to force the idea that he's, like, the most important member of this team when they don't write him up to that.
Yep.
Like, even better if they had, like, made it more dire. Like, maybe they're losing and they don't know how to fight, or they're...
Yeah.
Something. They need more drama there, but there is none.
Yeah, but it was so forced. But this idea of them being put into a problem and then the writers just writing them out of said problem, this isn't the worst case of it, but there's a moment or two in the episodes coming up that it just really, it's just really obvious. And I'll make a note of those when we get to them. But it's a theme with this season's writing. And I hate it. So much.
I mean, I've talked up the entire Geki coming out later to just being, oh, Red is the most important, so therefore he must have something happened to him.
I'm not necessarily complaining about that they did it. I'm more complaining about how they went about doing it.
Yeah, and I get it. And I definitely understand where you're coming from. And I, for the most part, do agree with you on what you're saying.
Hmm.
I just don't think it was that big of a deal. Because in Mighty Morphin, they even did like a thing where, oh, we have these powers and they taught us how to drive a Zord. Because the motorcycle comment could be thrown away as, oh, well, that's part of their powers. They know how to do stuff now.
If they just put in a throwaway line of, while you were in stasis, we were magically feeding you information of the modern time, so when you woke up, you knew what to do.
And yeah, that would make too much sense.
Yeah, but, I mean, why not? They do stuff like that for them in every other situation throughout the season. Where they literally... Because, I mean, literally, we haven't even gotten to this part yet, but they have a book in their hideout that literally just feeds them answers to their questions. Yep. So... why not just have it stated that they're just being taught information of modern times while they're in stasis?
Because we would rather have an explanation, any explanation at all, than it just happening randomly just because.
Yeah.
I am going to quote discount garbage dumpster Zordon here with a word from our good friend Gosei. There's a very simple explanation for
this. It's much complex for you to understand.
Yeah.
What? What did you say, Anthony?
I said it's much too complex for you to understand.
Yeah.
This season really does reek of that type of writing.
It does.
When you think about it.
I think Patrick would probably enjoy Abba Ranger and Abar Black if he wants to like see like a genuine culture shock type of story.
Well, that's why, I mean, I hope so, because that's why I hold Sir Ivan in such high regard.
Yeah.
Now, because I will... Okay.
That episode where he recruited, like, a traffic guard and all that stuff to be heroes because he thought they were, you know, like, great warriors and stuff because he didn't understand modern times was the exact kind of thing I want out of a character like him.
Now,
they'll do that with Abar Black. It's not going to be, like, a huge thing, but you'll like it in the first couple of episodes.
Now, I will say... I definitely hear you, and I definitely agree with you that there's even more of a culture shock here. However, too much culture shock can lead to some really bad stuff, too. I'm looking at you, John.
What do we want to give this edit?
Something is better than nothing, and we get nothing here.
Yeah.
Yes, but then when you get too much, that's also not good. You need to just right.
Yeah, but... At least make the effort, dang it.
Mm-hmm. But see, I'll make the argument David didn't make any effort either. They were just lazy and relying on Nikki, yay, yay. Or Yippee-ki-yay, or whatever the heck he was saying.
What do we want to give this out of 10, guys? I know Riz already gave his. I don't have much.
I'm going to lower my score, actually, to 5. After listening to Patrick.
Well, I don't have as many problems with it. And the thing is, I'm going to be really mean to these next couple of episodes. So I'm actually going to be nice. I'm going to give it a 7.
Now, yeah. I will say, Patrick,
uh-huh.
5 is still mediocre. So yeah. I'm not going into god-awful territory here. I'm just saying it's still mediocre crap.
I mean, this isn't even close to the worst this season gets. So a 5 is pretty fair.
Of bad.
Yeah, Zoo Ranger hasn't reached its final form yet.
Okay, Frieza, what's your score, dang it?
I love that description.
Well, I hate to say it, I'm going to give this a six. That's my score.
Yeah, I'd say 4 or something.
Not too bad.
You have to go on lower to me just to be different, huh?
Well, yeah, I don't normally give scores that low anyway, so I wanted to establish myself here.
I give scores that low. We all know that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so next up, we're going to move on to another two-parter. Episode 3, Finding a Land of Despair. This is a two-parter revolving around the Geo Rangers getting what are called the legendary weapons, power weapons, and Power Rangers. So at the beginning of this episode, the Geo Rangers, so they weren't able to use them when they were morphed, but they all had, like, their own, like, unique weapons, but unfortunately they all break at the beginning of this episode, and Barza reveals that there are 5 legendary weapons born from a slain dragon hidden in the Land of Despair, where they go and they'll have, like, 24 hours to get the weapons, but they'll turn to stone if they don't. The Geo Rangers head to the Land of Despair, and unfortunately, this is something that really bogs the episode down. We also have a child of the day named Hiroshi, who is also in the Land of Despair.
It begins.
Yeah. Where his mother is trapped, so they have to both find the weapons and help Hiroshi. We are introduced to how Bondora grows her monsters. You've seen it in Power Rangers. She throws her magic staff to cast a spell and make him grow. We get the debut of the other 4 guardian beasts when the monster of the day, Dora Minotaur, grows. Goshi's Jew Mammoth, Dan's Triceratops, Boy's Sabertooth Tiger, and May's Pteranodon. You know, here's a funny thing about this episode. The footage of the other 4 Geo Rangers, so Goshi, Don, Boy, and May, the footage of them summoning their guardian beasts in this episode only, they would frequently so keep in mind, you know, Mighty Morphin really liked to, like, show the full Megazord sequence a lot to kind of pad the episode out, so you would get, like, the footage in even, like, a regular episode. You would get, like, footage of each ranger calling their Zord and the Zord arriving, and then showing like the complete sequence, because you know they need to show off the toys and everything. They actually reuse the shots frequently of them calling their guardian beasts. Here's the awkward thing. The shot of Mei calling her guardian beasts has Hiroshi standing right behind her in the background. So you can't use that shot. So what did Saban do? Well, let's just not show Kimberly calling for her Zord and just hope that the audience is too stupid to realize that. That was always so awkward. I even noticed that as a kid.
Didn't even like bother taking footage somewhere else. I would have preferred that over anything, but wow, like, that was lazy.
Yeah, it's like, it's so awkward. Like, you see Trini call for Sabertooth Tiger Power, and then we see the Sabertooth Tiger Zord, and then just spontaneously, even though we don't see Kim do anything, here comes the Pterodactyl Zord. So, I just wanted to bring that up, because even when I was a 5-year-old kid, I always noticed that, and that always bugged me. So unfortunately, at the end of part one, Hiroshi begins to fall into despair over his mother, and he starts turning to stone. That then leads us to the two-parter, where the G-Rangers, with only a few hours left, well, not even an hour left, they overcome a trial with an evil sword, and they get legendary weapons. Now, even though these were adapted into power weapons, they actually, one thing that I think is cool in a G-Ranger is that they have their own, like, medieval-looking form when the G-Rangers are unmorphed, but then they'll transform when the Rangers morph. I actually think that's really cool. They include Geki's Ryu Geki-Ken, which translates as Dragon Strike Sword, a sword, power sword. Goshi's Mothbreaker, an axe that has a blaster mode, the power axe. Dan's Tricera Lance, a double-bladed three-pronged spear that can split into two short spears. Boy's two saber daggers, and Mei's Terra Arrow, a bow and arrow. And they combine to form the Howling Cannon, the power blaster. And this episode, the G-Rangers use the legendary weapons to defeat Dora Minotaur. They save Hiroshi and his mother, and then the episode ends with them doing some epic posing with the legendary weapons, and that's it. What do we think of this episode, guys? Anyone want to go first?
I'm gonna cut Patrick off again real quick.
Please.
Okay. I do have a couple of nitpicks in this episode, because in the first two-parter, they're very clearly using weapons of this exact same design as the ones that they use in the later episodes in this batch that we're watching. But then when they're in their civilian form, they're using utter crap as their weaponry. But then when they get their final copy of the weapons at the end of the two-parter, those weapons don't look anything like what any of the other weapons, and I don't see them again after in that form. So I'm very confused on, like, what these weapons are and why we don't see them used ever again after they're so dang good.
Are some of the ones they used before they got broken, or?
Okay, so I'm going to use Power Ranger terms here because that's what I'm more comfortable with. The power weapons that we see in episodes 1 and 2 are the power weapons that we see throughout Mighty Morphin and, I'm assuming, throughout Zero Ranger. The weapons they're using in episode 3 at the beginning are akin to, like, training weapons, like a wooden sword or whatever crap. But then at the end, they get some pretty cool looking weapons that don't resemble the power weapons. They look different, and you never see them again.
Well, they have.
But then in the next episode, they're the power weapons. So I don't understand. Like, do the weapons morph with the ranger? Is that what happens?
Yes. Yes.
That's besides that.
What?
Yeah, they. When they're fighting in their regular clan outfits, they're the old style look, but then when they change into their Zoo Ranger suits, they change into the weapons we know.
That's stupid. Like,
he has established that this is...
I mean, that's what happened when they henshin those weapons transformed in their roll call after they got them. That was kind of there to establish that the weapons henshin with them.
That could have been a quick one-liner to throw out there just to say that, dude. That'd been nice. But overall, my thoughts on this, beyond my nitpick on the weapons, again, mediocre, nothing... It's typical Super Sentai type thing where you go on a hero's quest to find your weapons, and of course, you gotta save the little kid the evil witch kidnapped, and, you know, his mom's there as well, and everyone's turning to stone. It's very typical Super Sentai, and I don't have any other real big nitpicks about it, honestly. It was fine.
Yeah, the Hiroshi plot in this episode is really annoying, because I feel like if you cut that out, this could have been a great episode where, like, each of the G-Rangers have to, fight against a monster or something to get their individual legendary weapon. Like, this is a perfect personification of one of the biggest problems with G-Ranger. If you cut out these Child of the Day plots, this series could be so much more. But you have this stupid Child of the Day plot, which doesn't even make any sense, because, like, you don't need to have Hiroshi in there. They already have a reason to go to the Land of Despair, so it's useless, and it just bogs the episode down.
They could have made it the one. They could have made it the one episode, like they did in Mighty Morphin, and called it a day.
Yeah.
Like Mighty Morphin ripped is better.
Exactly.
That's saying something. And like, this was like an early Mighty Morphin episode where the writing was not really that great.
No, this was episode three, I think, two or three.
Oh, it was three. Never mind.
Yeah, episode three, Mighty Morphin. I thought it was done better over there.
Which it was, so, yeah.
And I mean, you know, I get that they have to have the kid plot, because what I'm assuming here is they're trying to relate this back to the kids back home watching, like, I know you can't relate to the big, bulky guys with the swords and the guns, but maybe if we throw in some kids, you're going to think, oh, this is cool. But it's not.
You want to let loose, Patrick?
Nathan, Anthony?
Oh, yeah, basically, Nate, you basically said what I wanted to say, so, but honestly, yeah, this is what really bogs me about Zoo Ranger, is they focus too much on these damn kids, and it's very annoying. I really get, I adore kids, I want to have kids someday, but if it's gonna ruin my Sentai, I don't want them in the show.
You know, I need to make a meme where I take each of your faces, I put them on the body of an old man on a porch, and you say, damn, kids, get off my lawn.
Get out of my Sentai.
I need to make a meme of this now.
You damn kids, get out of my Sentai.
You'll be saying it by the time we're done with this season also. I promise you.
Yeah.
Because this is just the start of an... Yeah, we'll get used to it. Just about every episode is like this.
I know. I know it is. I'm not defending the kid subplot.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the story writing has not hit. This is utter garbage that will make me hate it more than I hate Gekki Ranger. I would still rather watch the stupid kid plot than have to listen to an imbecile who has the mentality of a 2-year-old try and walk around and talk about stuff.
I got something to say about the Child of the Day plots too, but I'm actually going to wait till we get to the end of this. Yeah.
I'm holding most of my thoughts for that as well.
Yeah.
You want to say anything else, Patrick?
Patrick, please unleash now.
Yeah, I do. So, the coincidence thing I was talking about earlier, yeah, we have more of it here. So our weapons break. Cool. We need more weapons. Well, let's open up our big book of plot convenience. oh, look, there just happened to be a dragon that had five of the exact weapons we needed conveniently in this mystical land somewhere. Well, how do we get there? Well, it's for some reason inside of Geki's sleeping chamber. How convenient, right, guys? All of this lines up just perfectly for them.
It makes me wonder, why didn't they just tell them in the beginning to go get these weapons in, like, episode one or two?
Or better yet, like, Barbara could just, like, you know, maybe told them, like, hey, like, if there's any case of emergencies, there is a place I know you can get more weapons if you need them. But that's only if for emergencies now.
Yeah, but... like, when just like, Geki, open your door, and he opens the door, and it's right inside there. I'm like, come on! How can you be any more lazy with your writing?
I would prefer them, like, have to trial through this, like, I don't know, dimensional door, and then they have to, like, they can go in, but they have to find a way to get out themselves.
Yeah, it's just... yeah, and then the whole evil sword thing. Oh my god, Geki, I'm gonna take it so I can try to. I'm evil now. Geki, snap out of it. Okay.
Plot convenience playhouse, everyone.
Yeah. And I'm not gonna be too hard on the whole we're turning the stone. Hey, weapons, can you help us thing? Because that's just the sentient weapons listening to them is just a tired. What's the term I'm looking for?
Cliche?
Yeah, a tired cliche. It happens in a lot of stuff, so I'm not going to give it too much, but... oh, God. I think I got my point across. It's just everything is just spoon-fed to these people. They don't really earn anything.
Yeah. I'm probably going to give this a 6. I think it had some entertaining action, but that Hiroshi plot really bugs me.
I'm going with a 6 as well for the same reasons. Anthony?
But Nate and Risen, that's why I give it a 6 as well.
So Patrick's going to give us a 4, right?
Yes.
I'm going to start guessing Patrick's score for him. That sounds like a fun game.
All right, so next up we have our very last two-parter until the last two episodes. Episode 5, Scary Riddles. It's a two-parter where they're battling against Dora Sphinx, where pretty much in this episode, the latest Dora Sphinx monster, who has a human form, he gives people 10 seconds to answer difficult riddles, and they get turned into trees if they fail to answer it. Don and Boy get turned into trees first while they're untransformed, and then Goshi and Mei... get turned into trees while battling Von Dora's forces. And Geki manages to guess all of Dora Sphinx's riddles correctly. But while he's trying to fight Dora Sphinx when he's grown, he gets put into this unknown land. And then that leads to episode 6, Arise Daijujin, where in the episode Geki is given a vision of what'll happen if he fails to unite the G-Rangers. I have a lot to say about that plot, but I will in a second. The only way that he can free his friends, according to Barza, is to find the Dino Crystals, and then there's a fight where he's battling with Giant Reforzer and Dora Sphinx, where Geki finds the Dino Crystals, and yet another act of plot convenience. It's like he's trying to fight them off, and then I think it was like his sword that glows, and then like lights a beacon to where these dino crystals are just inexplicably like buried under rock or something. Like,
I'm gonna get a head start on my rant here. Where's the dino crystals? And the sword is like, they're conveniently 5 feet to your left, buried under one layer of rubble.
Now, I'm gonna add something on this too. So, to be fair, the Powerage adaption didn't really help much either in that situation. But I don't know.
I had to pause and laugh at this because of how stupid this was.
But the big thing about the Dino Crystals is that it helps him free his friends, and they are able to combine their guardian beasts into a tank called the Dino Tanker, which transforms into our main mech, Daijujin, which translates as Great Beast God. And they use it to defeat Dora Sphinx. We'll talk about Daijujin in a second, but yeah, this is another... Okay, I actually want to start off... I don't like how, like, episode 6 implies that, like, the problem with the G-Rangers up to this point is teamwork. Like, Geki is bad, is a bad leader because he can't unite the team. How did episode 5 establish that? Like, okay, maybe they try to imply that, like, Boy was upset and he, like, went out on his own. No, not Boy. Don was upset and kind of went out on his own, and that's how he got captured. But then, like, May apologizes that she didn't work with the team and went out on her own. But, like, May, you were fighting with Geki and Goshi when you got turned into a tree. You didn't go out on your own. Like, this is a horrible way to convey teamwork. Like, I've never got any implication in episode 5 that there was a problem with the teamwork with the G-Rangers.
Well, if they really bothered about this whole...
is that in the 2012 Teenage Ninja Turtles cartoon that came out on Nickelodeon, did a better job of showcasing that same conflict with Leonardo, and that showed that all that the three turtles were kind of like, you know, not really, you know, following his leadership like that. And he was frustrated, so he talked to Master Splinter about it, and Master Splinter was like, hey, well, you want to be leader, this is what you got to do with as being leader. It's not about how, you know, like, them appreciating you or whatever. It's just, you have to just stick with it and just be a good leader. And that managed to make it better than what's doing here. Then this is just not helping at all.
Is that in the original cartoon?
You
want to
know why that's the case?
Yeah. No, this is back in the 2012.
Okay. All right.
The animated one.
It's like, you want to know why that works so well compared to this, Anthony? The turtle shows always do an incredible job of exploring the characterizations of the Ninja Turtles and their relations with each other.
Yep.
This show has done jack diddly squat with that. So this is like, one of those, oh, they have bad leadership. How do we know? Because we told you.
Yeah. You don't have to show you
conflict.
We don't show you anything. We'll just tell you what happens, yeah. And you have to believe us.
You want to see real team conflict? Look a season back. That actual team conflict.
Exactly.
Want to say anything, Riz?
I was enjoying the popcorn, but yeah, I do have some thoughts here.
That Michael Jackson meme of him eating popcorn.
Yeah,
basically. I mean, I don't know. I differ from y'all a little bit here. Because definitely Dan was a dick and didn't have the team commitment to stick around and help. When he said if he wanted to go get his woman, you know. So he screwed up and not, he was not a team player. Mai had her own little thing, and I don't know, Ghosty and Boy don't really have personalities yet.
They never will.
They try to imply that Ghosty is like the brains of the team, but they don't really convey that the best.
I don't get that impression. I get the impression that Ghosty is very stoic.
Yeah, that's another way to put it.
Yeah.
But like, the point here is they do a decent bit to kind of convey this team has a long way to go before they're really a team. And I kind of liked that Geki got sued out by Tyrannosaurus about not being a good team leader. Was it earned? I don't think so, but it was nice to see him get hit early on that, and then him try and make amends to make the team better. Though I will say his tactic for reuniting the team, it felt very sallow in comparison to what it could have been.
Yeah, because like, how did he prove to the Guardian Beast that he united to the team? Here, I got your crystals. Let's form Daijujin, guys. Okay. Is that it? Is that all you need to do?
Yeah, I mean, there should have been something else that happened. That, you know, maybe this could have been a perfect time. I don't remember if it happened in the episode prior or not now. Maybe it did, but this would have been a perfect time to have the combined weapon thing happen. And they team up, they say, let's put our hearts together and make the ultimate weapon to defeat the foe, and then Rita says, magic step! My monster grow, and then they have to form the big Megazord, and that'd be it. That'd been fine, but they didn't do that. But I do like that they attempted to give some kind of call out to these guys. Are not a team, and they don't really work well together yet.
I guess I don't know. I just feel like after Jetman, with how the internal conflict is actually emphasized and portrayed so well, it just felt weaker this time.
Well, it also doesn't help that it's implied, and we're never really given any more information on this, that they worked together as a team back in their own time period to fight off Bandora at one point in time before.
Yeah.
So they have a history with each other already. Did they not work out the kinks then?
Well, we don't know the details. Maybe it was a one-off battle where they united as a team 160 million years ago.
Well, they also established that Daijujin was active back then. Was he formed then? I don't know. Like,
I don't know.
It kind of conflicts a little bit with what little we know about what happened back in their own time period in a way. So, I don't know.
I will say, despite their obvious faults as a team, this team functions way better than Geki Ranger.
Are you sure about that? Yes, it does.
When you don't bother to write characters, it's kind of easy to make them look like they function better as a team.
Exactly. I 100% agree with you, but
it's once a good again, kick for the wrong reason.
But I'd much rather a team that don't really have personality struggle to be a team than have I'm not going to even do it. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go on for another rant on Zahn. Simply because that'll go on for too long if I do right now.
I mean, as much as I hate the core three Geki Rangers, at least there was something notable going on with them amongst their ranks. There's nothing.
Yeah, you could see the conflict, but the conflict was so frustrating. It was.
Yeah, but
it was like
watching
toddlers fighting, and I hated it.
Yeah, but like going back to something I said earlier with the whole culture shock thing, I'd rather have something than nothing, and there's nothing here.
I mean, okay, so coming at this from the entertainment point of view, because I watch Sentai for entertainment, I don't watch it for anything other than that. If I'm entertained, if I find it engaging to some level, I'm going to keep watching it. At this point, the stuff with Zeoranger, with the weak story and the weak characters, it's not the best thing in the world, but god dang, it's so much better than what we got with Geki Ranger. Because at least I can tolerate these people.
I can't wait till we start reviewing a really good Sentai so that you can stop saying at least it's not Geki Ranger.
You haven't brought up a good Sentai in like...
We have...
Since Cancer.
Supposedly three coming up. Well, I can vouch for one of them.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but like... We haven't had a good Sentai to review since Gokai and Senken.
Okay, Jetman wasn't a bad Sentai. I know it was a little disappointing, but it wasn't horrible.
It wasn't horrible, but it was mediocre to me.
Yeah, okay. But
I'm not going to say it's a good Sentai. I'm going to say it's a mediocre Sentai because it's very average. And the same goes here with Zero Ranger. It's very average. There's nothing compelling to make it stick out as one of the greats or one of the worst. Yeah. You know, it's just middle of the pack, very nondescript, very kind of there.
What do we want to give this two-parter out of 10, guys?
I'm going to guess Patrick will give this a 4.5.
Honestly, even though this has the biggest stupid moment of these, well, I don't know if I want to call it the dumbest episode part of the whole finding the crystals thing, it's mind-numbingly stupid, but the whole idea behind the Dora Sphinx was actually pretty engaging, and it kind of salvaged what little there was to this two-parter. For what it's worth. So I'll give this one a 5 just because I feel like being generous right now.
And see, I gave you a 4.5 on that, Patrick, because I couldn't tell if you're going to lean to a 4 or a 5. So I figured I'd land in the middle, so at least I'd be close enough.
Yeah, at least the Dora monster was entertaining. That's...
Oh, no, I actually enjoy Dora Sphinx quite a bit. I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, but Dora Sphinx and his little gimmick was pretty entertaining. And honestly, I spent some time trying to guess the riddle, and it was engaging. I was entertained.
Yeah,
trying to
exactly.
And I like how they used that gimmick one of the things like him, too.
Yeah.
Oh, that was pretty wonderful, actually. I like that.
Because this is something we haven't really touched upon yet, but Zoo Ranger is very heavily inspired off of European and Western lore and mythology more than anything else. So they take heavy inspiration off of what did these creatures do in their mythos and how were they defeated in said mythos, and it makes the Dora monster conflicts and fights actually probably the best part of this season.
And my liking for how Dora Sphinx works, that's actually why I'm going to give this a 5. That makes it good.
Yeah.
Well, okay, not good, but meh.
I'm gonna give it a 7.
Anthony?
I'll give it a 6 too, because this was actually one of the better episodes, honestly, like as far as how the plot goes, and it made a lot more sense than it did in Power Rangers, because like, oh, I heard Billy and Trini there. Oh, they're busy doing other stuff, and you know, why did freaking Zach punch Squat and Babu out of nowhere? Because!
I will say, the entire Unhenson, them running to try and punch the guy was kind of entertaining to watch as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
But, I'm giving this a 7. It was going to be an 8, but no, it doesn't deserve an 8.
Okay, before we move on to the next episode, so we've seen the Guardian Beast in action, and you know they now have their main mech Daijujin. So what do we think about the Guardian Beast and Daijujin? And I have something very big I want to say about these mechs, so I'm going to let the other guys give their thoughts real quick.
Yeah, Daijujin is my favorite design main mecha. I can't explain why, but I've always loved the design of this thing.
Yeah, I've grown up with Daijujin, and I think it's one of my favorite mechs because of the nostalgia, but also, I'm going to hearken to a good friend of mine from another podcast, Nathan Marson from The Power Trip, and he goes on record numerous times in The Power Trip podcast saying, the beauty of Mighty Morphin, and by extension, I'm going to assume he's going to say for Zero Ranger, that the beauty of it is, by the end of the thing, you have 7 mechs, and they're very simplistic, they're really well designed, they're cool looking, and they offer enough entertainment for 40 plus episodes, and you don't need more than that. Because I like the simplicity here because I don't like the later seasons where I can't keep track of what Zord is in play and what Zord is not in play. Like, honestly, after Lost Galaxy, I start to not like the mechs anymore all that much across the board because there's too many of them. And it gets to be too much to keep track of, and it's annoying. Not to say that the mechs are not cool after that point. They are. And their designs are really badass. But
I don't know about after Lost Galaxy. Maybe after Wild Force, though. For me.
Well, it began with Lightspeed a little bit, because there's a couple of... There's like four or five... There's at least four main mechs. And that's when I started to feel like, okay, this is getting to be ridiculous. I mean, Turbo had the same problem a little bit. But it really got to be noticeable in Lightspeed. But yeah, definitely Wild Force is where things got really irritating. Which, on top of the fact that I hate Wild Force, didn't really help matters too much for me.
Anthony?
As everybody said, I grew up with it too, so yeah. I like it because, you know, it's pretty badass. That's all I can say.
As for Daijuzhin as a person, I'm going to hold on that.
Okay. Yeah.
Nathan, I wasn't going to talk about the person yet because I have opinions on that later.
No. Wait until we get to the Dragon Ranger arc.
Yeah.
Just.
But, so. Here's something to really talk about, like, not just with, like, these, but, like, the G-Ranger mech line in general. Even if you remove the nostalgic bit from us, from, like, us here in the U.S., I don't think enough people realize just how, like, groundbreaking and historical this mech line is. So, okay, I'm saying this as someone who has seen his fair share of pre-G-Ranger Sentai. I've seen Sun Vulcan, everything from Change Man to Turbo Ranger. I'm currently watching Five Man, and as you know, I've seen Jetman multiple times. And the thing about every pre-G Ranger Sentai, so every Sentai that came before this, is that the mechs... So, okay, some pre-G Ranger mechs are cool. Like, I like Masked Man's and everything, but the mechs in all the pre-G Ranger series, they all have, like, the same type of gimmick and everything, where all of them are based on vehicles. Like, even Live Man, which is an animal-themed Sentai, their mechs are vehicles that would just, like, some superficial animal-based things. Like, you know, Red Falcon, okay, his mech is based on a falcon, but it's just a jet fighter painted to look like a falcon. And Blue Dolphin, it's supposed to be a dolphin, but it's just a submarine painted to look like a dolphin, and so on and so forth. And to give a more, like, example that you guys would be familiar with, look at the Jetman mechs. Okay, they're meant to be themed after birds, but they're just jet fighters with, like, some superficial bird paint on them. Mechs are not like that. Like, these are literal robotic animals that move and attack like animals. Like, the Tyrannosaurus isn't a truck with, like, a dinosaur, with, like, a T-Rex head put on its front. It's literally a mechanical Tyrannosaurus that attacks and has abilities based on a Tyrannosaurus. Like, it can, you know, attack. Like, okay, sure, real Tyrannosauruses can't shoot a laser out of their mouth, but you guys get what I'm saying. Like, it can attack with its tail. You know, the mammoth is like a big giant walking mammoth that can shoot cold out of its trunk. You know, the saber-toothed tiger can, like, you know, attack, like, you know, with, like, quick, like, you know, like an actual tiger. Okay, maybe the Triceratops is a bit more tank-like, but yeah, like, these mechs, like, they really broke the ground for, like, you know, more animal-based mechs. Like, this is the first Sentai where we can really give credit to that. And
he put actual effort into it.
So, yeah.
And Daijuzhin wasn't a box either. Yeah. A lot of Sentai that came before this one, the mechs were very square. Daijuzhin actually had some shape to him.
I think Daijuzhin has a lot more color to him as well. Like, I can see the colors of the of the Rangers reflected in him, as opposed to like all the other pre-G Ranger mechs I've seen, with a few exceptions where, I don't know, they just look bland in terms of their colorization. Like,
yeah.
So at the time, Daijujin looked really unique, and I still think he holds up. Like, I really think, mm-hmm. like, these G-Ranger mechs, like, okay, say what you will about the rest of the show. We're obviously going to have some choice words to say about it, but, like, the mechs with, like, you know, the dinosaurs and everything, like, that's, like, they're still fun, and they still hold up today. Like, they're just amazing mechs, and...
Well, that's something that Zoo Ranger does incredibly well aesthetically. Just about everything about Zoo Ranger's A-tier. Suits, mechs, weapons, all that stuff is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, we actually get to move on to... for these next two episodes, we get a little bit of time to breathe. We get two filler episodes. Episode 7, I Can See, I Can See. It's a filler episode. Okay, technically, I have these episodes, like, something-centric, but okay. This episode is ostensibly Dan-centric. Keep in mind, I'm going to say ostensibly because most of these episodes, yeah, you get what I mean.
Yeah, it's not.
It's ostensibly Dan-centric, where Don befriends...
You're saying words, but I don't think you know what these words mean, Nate.
Okay.
They're not even ostensibly about him.
Okay, right. Don.
It's like that meme from The Princess Bride. You're saying these words, but I don't think you know what they mean.
Or Don befriends this. Yeah,
give me crap, Nate.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool, man. On this episode, Don befriends this boy who has a crush on this girl, and they're battling against a goblin monster that can only be seen by children. Not really much else about it other than them just kind of needing the kid to help them, you know, switch the goblin shoes so that they can see it. Okay. There's not much to talk about with this episode, although I will say... It's really sad how we're 7 episodes into Sentai and the only one who has a very clear and obvious personality is Don. And I hate Don, and thank God that Billy exists, because he, like, Billy takes Don, even if we're talking about just season 1 Billy, like, even season 1 Billy, he, like, would take Don and break his back over his knee and throw him into the ocean. Like, that is how better Billy is than Don.
No, he would do. He would scientifically beat him, make him look stupid, and then throw him across the river. See?
No, but no, he would beat him like that SpongeBob Patrick scene where Patrick was just flying around and SpongeBob was standing there.
Yeah.
Have mercy.
Actually, no. What would happen is that Billy would recite a simple scientific equation. And then Don would die because he couldn't process that and his brain would just explode. Yeah, but what would we think about this episode?
I think this is probably the weakest episode of Bats, honestly.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start off with a very obvious Patrick question here before he can get to it. Because this one begs me to ask the question before Patrick can get there. If we're going to assume these guys come from 160 million years ago.
Correct.
What connection do they have to becoming friends with all these little kids?
That is exactly the question I want to know myself.
I mean, okay, I understand like a one-off here or there, like maybe... They're walking down the street and they see a kid get kidnapped by a big monster and have to go save the kid. That makes sense to me. I get it.
Yeah.
But very clearly here, Dan is friends with this kid. And in the next episode, I'm going to spoil a little bit here. Boy is friends with a kid.
Yeah, that's going to be a common theme. Like, the G-Rangers are like public figures, it seems.
And I get that. That's fine. I don't mind them being public figures.
But I mean,
that's
like,
cool.
Unhinged G-Rangers. Like, they know who they are.
No, I'm still okay with that. That's fine. But my critique here is, what connection do they have that they can only befriend kids and nobody else? Like, why are they befriending that poor college student down the road that who needs help because they are failing their math class and they just need a hug? Like, why kids, of all things? Like, okay, I understand. Like, so I watched Mighty Morphin in preparation for the Mighty Morphin review we did. And, you know, talking to Patrick and y'all prior to doing any of this stuff, the biggest complaint I really recall y'all making was about the kids. And so when I was watching Mighty Morphin, I noticed a good bit of, oh, hey, this is Trini's cousin, or hey, this is the kid that Kimberly and Trini are child sitting or something or another, and they get in trouble, or like Jason's brother or whatever
cousin
comes to visit, cousin comes to visit. So like, okay, I understand those connections. That's all plausible. These are high school kids in a high school in California, not Los Angeles, but California. And it's very easy to say, I have cousins who are younger than me that I have to take care of sometimes, or hey, I'm assigned to take care of this kid or observe him or whatever they're doing for this class thing or whatever. Like, that all makes sense. Or even when Zach was teaching hip hop keto and he was friends with the little kid who he was teaching, that all makes sense. But for the love of God, why did Dan, of all people, befriend a kid? Dan's too busy chasing tail normally. How did he see a kid?
Unclear.
Yeah, I think Riz is starting to understand where we're coming from, because this is 80% of Zoo Ranger.
No. Okay, so I understand your complaint.
Yeah.
But my point still stands from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate this. I just find it odd and mediocre at best. That entire rant was just me being confused. I'm not angry here. I'm not pissed off. I'm not, like, I'm not wanting to go punch a fucking idiot. Oh, I have to edit that out later now. I don't want to go out and punch an idiot for running around and being a selfish little twerp that he is. Like, I don't get those feelings watching Zero Ranger. I don't get that anger watching Zero Ranger. I just get the feelings of, meh. This is borderline boring and okay, cool, whatever. I'm not going to remember this in a month. So, yeah, I see your point. But no, I'm not at the point of I hate this like how you are. There's a big difference there.
Yeah, well, you're also the only one here that hasn't seen the season to completion yet.
Yeah, well, when we get to the end of the season, you can ask me again what I think.
I'm giving this a 4. It's, the thing is, I don't hate any of these episodes to give it like a 2 or a 3, but it's still poor, in my opinion. I'm giving it a 4.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a 4, and I'm going to guess Patrick's giving this like a 2.
No, 3. Close, but no cigar.
And then Anthony's going to give it a 4 or a 5.
You're right. I'm going to give it a 5. It was just not good to me.
Okay, now we're going to move on to another filler episode, which kind of has boy as a centric character, but it's not a boy episode. This is actually going to be a big one because it was adapted into a very classic episode of Power Rangers. Everyone remembers the episode with Pudgy Pig in Power Rangers. Pudgy Pig might be the most iconic Power Ranger monster in Power Rangers. It's really big. But this episode does not have a food fight, unfortunately. Although it probably would be a lot better if it had a food fight.
It would have.
So in this episode, the Dora Cirque, or I don't know how to pronounce that, to be honest.
I have no idea.
I think it's pronounced Cersei.
No, Cersei is the Game of Thrones character, and that's a different spelling.
Yeah, I think it's pronounced
Cirque.
Yeah, I'm going to go
Cirque. He's a pig monster, and he's going around eating, you know, all the food in the world, just like Pudgy Pig, because Dora, because Von Dora, what was her motivation for this again? Like, she hasn't, like, she feels...
She didn't eat for days or something, because she had a stomach ache.
And he eats the Jew Ranger's weapons, and then they have to go and get this herb that will help them get their weapons back. And they get it with the help of a character named Gnome, who we're going to see again in a later episode, a very important episode, actually. But we'll get to that when it comes. I don't like this episode. Okay, so there's a bunch of stupid things in this episode. So first of all, there was one point where, unfortunately, I was drinking water when this scene happens. I accidentally spat it out. There's a point where the child of the day, Mamoru, is like, he's feeling hungry and he sits on this park bench. And instead of just showing boy walk up to him naturally, no, let's have boy do like a bunch of backflips randomly right out of nowhere and just show
up. I'm glad I'm not the only one that laughed at that.
Why was I drinking water at that scene? I almost spat it out. God. That was...
You
said this is how I go on walks.
Yeah, that was so random. Like, was he doing training or something like that? Like, could you just give a throwaway line or something? But... like, this episode is so disturbing because, like... So the thing is that the child of the day... he's a bit of an overweight kid, and his parents are also overweight because they like to bond over family meals. And, like, they get into, like, this violent fist fight over food. Now, you could argue that maybe they're doing it just because, you know, they're getting hungry or something. But I don't know. It just feels more like, get it? They're fighting over food because they love food because they're fat. Because
they're fat.
Get it? Like...
there's also going back to that fight scene, there's something stupid about that comes up later. When they're trying to figure out, is there a Dora monster involved in this? Well, I recorded this. You recorded them eating dinner when you didn't know that anything was going to happen there. How did you get that?
I understand that.
How did you get that tape? Why do you have that tape?
How'd you even record? I know how to record things.
And like, there's a part where like Mamoru's pants like fall down because he's apparently lost weight. It's like, get it? He's not fat anymore because he hasn't eaten for 3 days. He used to be fat. Get it?
So like my thing there was when I watched it, I never got the impression that he was actually that overweight at all. I thought he was a normal kid.
Yeah.
Like, even the parents.
He was
they're
fat.
Not...
by showing you, like, oh, he eats a lot. Or it's more or less they have to, like, physically show you he's fat instead of just actually, you know, getting a kid that would look a little more overweight. If that makes sense.
Even the parents are not fat. Mm-mm. I mean, her dad's a little staunchy, but whose dad is not staunchy, really? Let's be honest there.
Yeah, because they just didn't really, like, get the real essence of it by not hiring people who were a little more overweight than what they were trying to get across in this episode. That's my guess.
I thought it was kind of odd, the emphasis that their family put on eating together. Like, I get family meals are important. When I'm with family, we eat meals together. It's just what you do, and I'm sure y'all do it as well.
Yep.
But...
yeah,
it just felt a little extra forced, but I don't know if I'll go to the extremes of saying this is fat shaming or something, because I don't know if necessarily that was a thing they were doing here.
I guess
if they were, like, they were doing a poor job of it, because it's just
if they were fat shaming, they did a really bad job of telling me they're fat shaming. I think they're just I think the Japanese has a different set of humor when it comes to like overeating than we do. And I think that might be something that we're seeing here. I don't know. Because I do know that the Japanese humor can be a little bit different than ours.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with how Nate's feeling about this episode, because it's,
I'm not discounting anything you're saying, Nate. I'm just saying, me being a fellow fat person, I don't look at this episode and get instantly annoyed about it. But I definitely see why you do, because I do see what you're seeing.
I think the bigger problem I have. So here's the funny thing. Like I said earlier, I'm watching Five Man right now. Funnily enough, after I watched this episode, there's actually an episode of Five Man that that has almost the exact same plot. But I feel like it's funny because people don't like Five Man, but that episode handles it so much better. Like, it shows like the effects that people are having when they get hungry, like in the fighting and fist fighting that they go through, feels so much more natural. And the funny thing is that they actually do a much better job at like explaining how the food is disappearing, because like the monster's moving too fast for people to notice. But there's this kid who is obsessed with taking pictures, and he manages to get a photo of the monster. So yeah, I've seen that's this episode done a lot better in Five Man, believe it or not.
You know where I thought done better? Yep.
And once again, you know, I hate to steal Patrick's thunder on this, but like, this is another plot convenience. Oh, the pig just ate your weapons? Well, here's this magical herb that can just make him throw up, and we're going to give it to you.
Yeah, it's also how they got that herb was stupid. Oh, you're going to have to earn it. Okay, what kind of crazy trick? You have to eat all this stuff. That was...
And, like, I honestly was hoping that the people that gave him the challenge would keep making boy eat more carrots over and over again, because that'd be kind of funny. But no, they made him eat one carrot. Then he was wanting to faint and throw up because he had to eat another carrot. And then they're like, JK, no big deal. We're not going to make you eat it. Here's your weapons back, by the way.
Yeah. Genga Man did that. Genga Man did that concept better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, this and the episode prior are the two weakest, in my opinion, of the bats.
I'm probably going to give this a three. Like it.
Yeah.
I'm going with a four.
Yeah, it's a three for me, too.
It's definitely going to be a three for me as well.
Okay, well, we're...
Because when they're trying to defeat Pudgy Pig, the Rangers themselves notice, oh, this monster doesn't like spicy foods. If we give him spicy foods, he'll throw up our weapons, and we'll get our weapons back so we can kill it.
Yeah, that worked a lot better.
That's genius.
I also have to admire the Mighty Morphin episode for remaking those giant food props. That was actually really cool.
Dude.
Because I don't...
Yeah. Also, yeah. I do like the way that they discovered how to defeat Pudgy Pig and Mighty Morphin over in this, because in Mighty Morphin, they realized very astutely, hey, Pudgy Pig is not eating any veggies. Mm-hmm. Let's throw veggies at him and see what happens.
And how did they figure it out in this one? Book of Plot Convenience.
Quick, to the convenience book!
Yeah, no.
This is actually the one small itty bitty thing that I did like about this episode, was the fact that they actually gave a reason as to why Bandora couldn't grow this monster. Because I know in Power Rangers he just didn't bother doing it because it was already too late, the monster was already destroyed. But in Zoo Ranger, she tried to do it, but she was too weak from not eating, so she was like, I can't throw my staff. I'm just too hungry. I like that little detail, because in Power Rangers she just kind of just like didn't even bother growing the monster. So now we know why in Zoo Ranger.
Yeah.
All right, so we're gonna wrap this up with one last two parter, episode 9, Run, Prince of the Eggs. So in this episode, the G-Rangers encounter the prince of an ancient kingdom named Yoru, who is the prince of the Apello tribe. They are these tribe that were put in charge of guarding two dinosaur eggs. It's revealed in a flashback that... and we'll find out more why in the endgame arc, but Bondora wanted to wipe out the dinosaurs, and she nearly destroyed them all. So after she was defeated, they had two dinosaur eggs, one male and one female, locked away in the hopes that they could revive the dinosaur race. And the Apello tribe were given a duty from Daijujin to guard the eggs. They were tricked into eating forbidden fruit and got turned into monkeys by Daijujin. Such a nice guy, Daijujin. You know, in order to guard the eggs, and most of the episode is the G-Rangers Bondora trying to find the dinosaur eggs so that she can wipe them out, and then in the next episode, they find the chest containing the dinosaur eggs, which were protected by an energy shield, and unfortunately, the episode ends with where the Apello tribe is battling against these other groups of people called bombs, and the dinosaur eggs get lost as the chest gets sent tumbling into the ocean and it gets washed away, although they still survive. And unfortunately, the dinosaur eggs are going to be a very recurring plot element, which I...
I love how you said unfortunately, because I share the sentiment.
I hate it! These things are going to pop up in so many more episodes, and it's just going to make everything needlessly complicated.
And the end result ultimately means nothing either. So,
you know, I was kind of hoping that these eggs would result in Titanic and Dragonzord.
No. Oh no, that would be clever writing. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually makes sense.
That's what I was assuming was going to happen.
No. This storyline doesn't get resolved until the final scene of the season, and the payoff is pathetic.
You know, I have a question about this story arc. I mean, the rest of the episode... Okay, first of all, the episode ends with, like, Daijujin wanted to turn those people back into monkeys, but then the G-Rangers say no, and then Daijujin's like, oh, okay. And then, the episode ends. Okay, I have a question about these dinosaur eggs. You want to bring the dinosaurs back. Okay, maybe that made sense in prehistoric times, but in modern times, like, are you aware that there's probably going to be some problems with a bunch of giant man-eating reptiles roaming around the world? Why do you want to keep these things around these days?
Can I remind the Zero Rangers and the island people of a little movie I like to call Jurassic Park?
Yeah. Why do you want to bring dinosaurs back?
I thought this was going to lead to Titanus or something later on. That's what I was expecting. So I was like, okay, this is going to be fine. No big deal.
Sorry to give you that spoiler, but no.
Yeah. I know.
Y'all spoiling me. I hate y'all.
Honestly, the whole plot surrounding the eggs being brought to this island doesn't really make any sense either. So,
why?
They said that they sent the eggs into the ocean after Daijujin sealed Bondora away and the Zoo Rangers were put into hibernation, right? That's what they said.
Yeah.
So the eggs ended up on the island. But then Bondora came and attacked the island?
How did she know that the eggs were there?
She was sealed.
No, yeah. I'm asking, is that your question?
No.
That's equivalent to Vegeta from Dragon Ball Z or Bridge saying, how'd you want the parts you want that for?
Well, I mean, did they get the eggs and then they had the eggs for that whole time period until she got freed recently, or was that a plot hole of
the writers forgot that she was sealed, and then they attacked her immediately after getting the eggs. I don't understand. There's like missing details here.
Yeah, I can see that.
Make that more head.
I was watching them explain this plot, and I'm like, something doesn't make sense here.
No. Patrick, the words you're looking for is the math isn't mathing.
Yeah.
That's not how this works. That's not how this works.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought the only part of the episode I truly did not like. So, like I was telling these guys before we started recording, I wasn't expecting to see the rad bug
in
the
right.
Sentai period.
Oh yeah.
But the freaking rad bug is in the opening shot of episode 9. I'm like, wait, you mean to tell me this isn't an American thing only? What? But then I thought it was pretty cool. I was kind of excited for that. But then they had to ruin it by giving it the most obnoxious horn in the world.
Yeah, I hated that horn. Stupid.
Episode, yeah. The first part of this two-parter also had probably the one of the funniest sequences in Sentai I've ever seen. So this girl gets home from school. Hey, is there a snack? I don't know. You need to go wash your hands first. A car appears in their living room. And then the doorbell rings. Here comes Putty. Here comes Rock Monsters. The doorbell rings 4 seconds later. Here comes Warriors. All out brawl in your living room. All in the span of 3 minutes.
The best part to
what
me.
The heck happened?
The best part to me is the girl opens the door like no big deal. Like,
no. Woo-woo.
Welcome. No, okay. So the first time the door opens, she's like, what are you guys doing here? Mm-hmm. And then she watches them run in, but then he opens the door for the Zero Rangers, and they run in, and she's like, welcome to my life now.
And then it cuts to the wide shot of the living room. There's a beetle here, and then there's five people fighting these dudes in rock outfits in like this tiny little room, and it was just hilarious to me.
Honestly, that scene
escalated hilariously fast.
That scene actually gave this episode more points than it probably deserved in my book.
Yeah, seriously. It was just over the top.
Like, I could see Patrick's typical 4 going to like a 5 for this one.
I'm tempted just because I got one heck of a laugh out of that whole sequence. And then it cuts like Goshi getting knocked into like her pan rack, and then things getting slammed on her dinner table, and she's probably like, "Why?"
I honestly really liked. I really, really enjoyed this set of episodes for, like, just the entire like Islander subplot and all that. I thought it was interesting at the very least.
That was better than most things I've seen up to this point.
Yeah, it was this. I think this is one of the more stronger set of episodes we had, honestly.
It's a shame that it leads to a completely pointless storyline.
Now, I will say, these two episodes hold a great importance in the Power Ranger franchise beyond Mighty Morphin, and extends well into even Cosmic Fury. Because they used footage from this episode to create the first early draft of what the Morphin Masters looked like.
Oh, yeah.
In Mighty Morphin.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
So the people, when they're putting the box in the water to set it off, those are the Morphing Masters in Mighty Morphin.
Oh, you're right.
So, yeah. When I saw this, I was like, oh, this is a very important moment in Power Ranger history. Because this is when you first see the Morphin Masters before you see them again in Dino Fury and possibly in Cosmic Fury.
What do we want to give this episode?
Patrick's giving it a 4.
I'm going to give it a 4, too.
Yeah. As much as that sequence was hilarious to me, it's not enough to bump it up. It's still a 4.
I'm going to give it a 4. Go ahead, Anthony.
I'm going to give it a 4, too.
I'm going to give it a 7. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. It was just kind of there in the middle and mediocre to me.
Okay, so that kind of wraps up the episode analysis. So let's talk about our early thoughts. And Riz, seeing as you're the only one who's not seen this Sentai before, what are the vibes you get early on?
Best Sentai ever. No, not really.
Your time is up.
Yeah, it's your...
See, I had a thought early on before we started recording that I was going to enter this call and I was going to spend the next 2 hours with y'all
pretending
trying to convince you that I like this better than Gokaiser. But the more I thought about doing it, I realized I couldn't do it with a straight face and I started laughing immediately.
I would have seen right through away. That crap anyway. It's like, there's no way.
If Sin Kenter can't do it, how can this do it?
Yeah, exactly.
That's Patrick's entire thought process right there.
I mean, am I wrong?
You're not wrong.
Exactly.
Because we're talking about my first and second favorite Sentai of all time right now.
Yeah.
No, so my early thoughts on this is, like I've been saying throughout, Nate, Zeoranger is very mediocre. It has very mediocre and bland characters on the Ranger side. The villains have very little anything going for them. Like, I actually get more from Rita and her crew than I do from Bandora and her crew. And they're the same characters.
Because
my argument is Goldar in the first 10 episodes was much more interesting than Goldar here. Griffin's or whatever. Yeah, I mean, even if he couldn't talk, it was the same thing.
I mean, in his defense, even when we get to the point where Gryphozor can start talking, he doesn't really get much of a personality anyway.
Yeah. I think that the Sentai is just going to continue being in that mediocre range. I get that the kids are a thing and we don't like the kids because they're annoying. And at some points, I do find them a little irritating, but it's not to the point of I hate this Sentai because the kids are terrible. I already hate a Sentai because there's a kid that's really terrible.
I think it's the point that they take the character development instead of from the Zoo Rangers, because the Zoo Rangers never get any.
No, they definitely do take the spotlight more than they need to, and that is the problem that I have with the Sentai, which is why it bumps down from being decent to being mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, like, if this didn't spawn Mighty Morphin and the Power Ranger phenomenon, this would be one of the Sentai that people would forget almost immediately.
Yeah.
But because we have nostalgia for the suits, because we have nostalgia for Daizuzen, because we have nostalgia for the entirety of Mighty Morphin, I think Zeoranger could be seen in a better light because of all that. But I don't by any means think it's a good Sentai, but I also don't think it's the worst thing in the world, like you tell me it is, Pat. So, yeah, mediocre is where I'm going to land here.
I'm going to say the same thing I said when we were reviewing Shinkanju. Just wait until we get to the end. For completely different
reasons. Honestly, the Child of the Day plots really bug me right now because, like, and okay, I apologize if this is going to be a common thing. I wasn't expecting it to, but here we are. I'm watching Five Man right now, and okay, Five Man, it has flaws, but Five Man has its occasional child plot of the day. But here's the reason why it works in Five Man. In Five Man, they're all teachers at an elementary school. So it works for them to like be close to children and wanting to help them. So
yeah.
I also prefer how Kaku Ranger went about it, because they established in Kaku Ranger that the yokai ate, like, children were their food source. So they kidnapped children in bulk. So the Kaku Ranger did have to do a lot of rescue missions on kids, but they never stuck around and established themselves as characters like they did here. They were just hostages and nothing more.
They were plot devices.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And in Five Man, most of the kids that they work with are their students, so it makes sense how they would have an attachment to the children. And not only that, but like their literal story is that the Five Man, like, they never really got a chance to be children. Okay, kind of a spoiler there, but like they lost their parents. They're all siblings in Five Man, and they lost their parents when they were young, so they never really got a chance to be children, so they kind of want to help children out. So the character development isn't perfect. I actually probably will end up liking Five Man a little bit more than some other people do. But yeah, I think that, I don't know, maybe it's just the fact that I'm watching this Sentai at the same time I'm watching Five Man that I'm kind of starting to maybe appreciate how they're doing it. Because like the Children of the Day plots just do not work in this Sentai. They just bog everything down. We don't really have to talk about the villains, because like Riz said, they're just kind of the same as their Power Ranger counterparts thus far. Okay, this is going to be difficult, I know, for everyone, but we kind of have to do this, because this is just how we do it. How would we rank the G-Rangers from best to worst? Like, what are our thoughts on each of them? Okay, then.
Can I cheat the system and put them all in last place?
I was expecting you to do that.
I'm being completely honest when I say this. I don't care about any of these people. They have done nothing to establish themselves.
I do have a ranking, actually. So, my ranking is... May is actually... the most potential to be a good character, in my opinion. Geki, Gosei, and Boy are all tied for second place because I don't care about them right now. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
Dan's just stuck as a human being. So he goes in last.
Hold on, I'm trying to pull up a tier that I made of like Sentai Blues to see where I put Don. Oh, yep, I put Don in F tier. Yeah, okay, that should. Yeah, he definitely deserves to be there. Yeah, go ahead, Riz.
Like, Geki, Gosei, and Boy don't have personality. So I can't judge them and give them a ranking, so I'm not going to. Mai, at least, is a kind person. And she's cute. So she has that going for her.
Oh, and her act.
That's all I got. Anthony,
yeah,
what's your ranking?
Wait, what are you going to say, Riz?
What is your ranking of characters?
Do I even have a ranking for these characters?
Are you able to see it like Patrick?
No, it's just like, I don't find the most appealing, to be honest with you. Like,
I mean, if there's nothing to distinguish them enough to rank them evenly, how can I rank them evenly?
That's why I put three of them in the same rank, because I don't have anything to go off of.
Yeah, I don't have anything to go off on any of them, so I'm putting them all in last place.
If I had to even say anything, I think... This isn't even fair yet, because Gosei hasn't really, like, developed as a character. He's honestly kind of my favorite, because he's the more level-headed one of the group. But that's it. He has nothing really going for him besides that.
Fair.
Yeah, when it comes to talking about when it comes to talking about Zoo Ranger characters, it's just wait until Rai shows up.
It's like waiting for Goku to show up.
Yeah.
I actually think, okay, I like Goshi being the more level-headed, which is why I'm going to put him in front. By the way, I've met all these Sentai actors except Don's actor. They're all, Geki and Mei were actually pretty cool, and Goshi was pretty nice. Boy was, okay, he wasn't mean, he was just kind of very professional, which, okay, I can't blame her for that. Yeah, they're all pretty cool people. They signed my my G-Ranger DVD case. I'm hoping I can meet Don at some point. After Goshi, I would probably put... What was that, Anthony?
As I'm friends with Goshi on, yeah. Goshi's at on Facebook.
I'm friends with Goshi, Mai, and Geki on Facebook, I think.
Cool. Now, my favorite Sentai actor I've ever met is the guy who plays Sasuke or from Kakuranger or Kyuga from Gingaman, but I'll get an opportunity to talk about him a little bit later. But with that said, I would probably put Mei second because I'm actually agreeing with Riz on, like, you know, the vibes for Mei. Like, she gives me good vibes. She's not Kimberly. I'll grant that. She's not Kimberly, but she's... not bad. I mean, I would probably put Geki just because, I don't know, maybe, I'm not as hostile toward Geki as other people. I just think that he's like your stereotypical cliched red at the time, which...
Exactly. Yeah. It's nothing to write home about.
And as someone who's seen like pretty, like a bunch of Sentai that came before this, I can, you know, confirm that he is in fact a cliched character. Boy... take him or leave him, and Don. Why does Don exist?
Right.
To be a horn dog.
Like, come on, Don. Raditz killed you in the previous Sentai. Could you just stay dead, please? Come on.
He's like, I never die. I always come back.
Literally too stupid to die.
Yeah, that's true, actually. what do we want to do for our... anybody want to give their closing thoughts on G-Ranger?
I already did.
Get me off this ride.
No. 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 You know why I'm saying no to you, Patrick? Because you're the one that said, I want to review G-Ranger to roast it.
Yes, I did. That doesn't mean I can regret my decision immediately.
No, it does, because you got us into this mess, now you gotta get us out of this mess. By
well, it makes
you
feel any better. I don't think, like, one of the two next Sentais that we're gonna review is not gonna be a mess. I think we'll like them.
Well, we're gonna like Time Ranger, at least.
So. And I already know Gingaman is worth it. So.
Yeah.
You wanna say anything, Anthony?
It's meh.
Okay. That's awesome. All right. Well, in that case, that wraps up our first G-Ranger review, which, yeah, you know, it's weird. I don't know. This is my third time. This is my second time watching it. And, you know, the thing is, like, when I was originally watching it, I really liked it. But that was mostly because I was, like, I was a teenager who got suckered in by all the aesthetics, which, I mean, I don't think I could blame my teenage self for that. But yeah, it's definitely not aged well. But with that said, guys, just a brief announcement for our next couple of G-Rangers. We're going to be doing a shorter podcast next time. We're going to be looking at 11 through 16. The reason why we're not going to be reviewing more is because after that, we are going to be taking a look at 17 through 22, which is a very special story arc, not just for G-Ranger, but it's also a big landmark in Super Sentai history. If you've seen Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, then you know exactly what we're talking about. The debut of Burai, the Dragon Ranger. And we'll talk about how we'll lay out the G-Ranger review after that when that time comes. But with that said, we thank you guys so much for taking the time to listen to us, whether on YouTube or Spotify. We love you all, you guys. And also our viewers, our listeners on iTunes. We love you guys too. If you are watching this on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel if you're not already subscribed, and leave comments down below. Especially if you guys like GeoRanger, please just explain to us why, and we'll give you a shout out. But with that said, we are the Toku Secrets Podcast. We thank you guys so much for taking the time to listen to us, and we will see you guys next time when we take a look at GeoRanger 11 through 16. But until that time, we will see you guys later. Stay safe, and we love you guys.